All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Taylor Radio. In this episode, I am going to talk about Chinese culture. I'm going to talk about how the United States is at a disadvantage to China informationally and in many other aspects. We've let ourselves go for too long. Then I'm going to jump into some Chinese history, not anything too heavy, but we're going to talk about control, dictatorship, Confucian values. How does that play into what the hell is going on in China? Is it an Orwellian state, or is it just a modern-day Confucian state? You can follow me on my website, tstuch.com, tstuch.com. Follow me on Twitter, tstuch1. Like and subscribe YouTube, Taylor space Stutch, T-A-Y-L-O-R space Stutch. You can buy my merch now, teespring.com/tstuch. I've got a funny shirt about Joe Biden. I'll be looking to add more. Follow me on Instagram, Taylor Radio, T-A-Y-L-O-R-R-A-D-I-O. Thank you and enjoy the episode. All right, guys, let's jump in to it for today. Now, there is a... I saw two things this week that gave me pause. Now, maybe these two people were reading the same thing, or maybe one was reading the other. But of course, like many things I talk about, it originated on the Twitterverse. So if any of you guys are not on Twitter, you are definitely missing out. Twitter is where it's happening. Twitter is where life goes down in the world. It is the nexus of the internet, for the most part. Now, what I'm going to talk about is China. So there's a very popular writer. I believe her name is Melissa Chen. Let's see. Melissa Chen. Yeah. And she is very cute. Have to say that, of course. Very cute. A Singaporean lady. And she is, I think, maybe 29 or so. She was on Joe Rogan's podcast. Pretty smart. Interesting, funny. She's a good follow on Twitter. And she made a comment the other day on her Twitter about how Westerners just do not understand China, but China understands like American culture very well, and it actually gives them an advantage. So that's where I want to start. Is this is something that I have seen and believed definitely before this. It's very interesting. I've been fascinated with the China situation since I lived there back when I was in college. As you guys may know, if you've been following my podcast, I was in Taiwan for a month this year, went there last year for a few. I've been to Taiwan 3 times. I tried to move back there before this damn pandemic started. So there's that. Now, when she made that comment, what it made me realize was that this is hitting more and more mainstream. She made in her comment, she talked about how it puts the fact that the Chinese have such an understanding of Western culture and American culture and American, you know, values and history, and we don't have enough understanding of theirs, puts us at a disadvantage. They have a kind of information asymmetry, right? The Chinese people know a lot more about us than we do about them. Now, that's very, very true, I think. So from what I've seen, the cultural zeitgeist, I guess, the cultural feeling was up until about last year, most people in the United States didn't think about China at all. People thought about the fact that, yeah, you know, maybe we lost some manufacturing jobs to China. Trump talked about that. Other politicians have talked about it here and there, some businessmen, some business leaders. But last year, tensions with China started to rise, and that is when people started paying more and more attention to China. Now, of course, as that happened on Twitter, there's a thing that happens on Twitter. On Twitter, whenever there is a new geopolitical event, lots of people put that studying that event into their bios. So, for example, on somebody might say, like, they might be like a news person. Okay, or no, they could be a news person, they could be a journalist, they could be an academic or a businessman. And if they put, like, hey, I am a journalist for this network, I'm, you know, a researcher, I'm whatever. Then after a new event happens, they'll put like something expert, right? So for example, they'll put like China expert or like China researcher or like One Belt, One Road analyst, right? One Belt, One Road is the program that China rolled out, I believe around 2013, maybe 2015, trying to kind of mimic the old Silk Road back of thousands of years ago, where they've been investing heavily around the world in ports and manufacturing and logistics to better connect themselves with different places around the world. And, you know, there's been lots of controversy around this program, this One Belt, One Road initiative. So when that really came into the public eye about a year and a half ago now, people started putting that in their bios, like, you know, One Belt, One Road expert or explainer or some shit. And that was really interesting to see in real time. I kind of saw that happening. And I've seen that happen more and more with the China situation. So now that we are in a trade war with China, we are realizing that one of our adversaries has lots of our manufacturing capabilities. And now people are starting to realize that we know much less about China than they know about us. And I think that that is I think that's dangerous, and I hope that we can change the tide. So it's dangerous in many ways, because what it does is it allows for more, when we talk about, people like to talk about like decentralized and centralized control of certain things, right? It could be government, it could be businesses. Well, the more people that know more things, the more decentralized and effective a attack could be. So here's an example, or not an example, but here's a kind of a thought we could go down and explore. Now, lots of Chinese people come to the United States and study, like many, 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 probably thousands and thousands every year. Maybe tens, hundreds of thousands, I don't know, but the number's super high. Go to any university, major state university campus, and you will find tons of international Chinese students. They are doing research, they are studying economics, they're studying politics, they're studying math, physics, science, and they're all, you know, they're learning how to operate in America. They're learning, they watch the news, they hear about the news in America. They hear about the culture. They live in the cultural environment. They know many things about America. So guess what? They can go back to China. They could work in a company or work for a government organization. And that government organization doesn't necessarily need to defer to a small group of quote-unquote like American experts. Instead, they could use the talent they already have, because so many people already have this knowledge. You could use this in any kind of situation. For example, if you're in a company where nobody knows how to do math, and, you know, every, like a certain, oh, or like maybe people aren't good at sales, right? Like maybe you work in a company where there's only one or two people that are actually good at sales or know anything about sales. Then the whole company has to rely on those few resources to do all the sales work. However, if many more people in that company are proficient in sales, or have learned sales and can get going, then you have a much more decentralized model where you have many people can work on their own in order to get sales leads and do things. You can get a lot more accomplished that way. So in China, maybe it wasn't their goal, but they have a situation where there's probably millions of people in China that know a lot more about American culture because they've been here, they've studied here, or, you know, just so many things are American-centric in the world or have been in the past, that now they know a lot more about us than we know about them. And that does put us at a big disadvantage, right? It puts our politicians at a disadvantage. It puts our businessmen at a disadvantage. It puts our military at a disadvantage. It puts everything at a disadvantage. And now, I don't want us to look at China as an enemy, but in the very least, an adversary, right? And when I say China, I'm not talking about, you know, all the regular Chinese people. You know, if you go to China, you'll realize that there's some really great people there. Very, very good people in China. I teach a lot of Chinese students. I I practice Chinese with people from China. I've got lots of friends I've made from China. You know, the Chinese people are, by and large, good people, very good people. And but they're run by a government that is very corrupt and power hungry, and they there's no morality. The morality does not exist like you might think of the typical Chinese people, and there's a lot of confusion there. So in order for American business, in order for American culture, in order for Americans, you know, in order for the American economy to really compete, I think in the coming decade, in this coming century, more and more people are going to have to learn. You know, you don't have to become proficient in Chinese, but we need to learn about Chinese history. You know, people should have a basic course in maybe Mandarin, depending on, you know, if you want to go into politics, you should have to know Mandarin. Right? Or not have to know, but you should at least have to take a course. You know, if you're going to go into the military, you should be learning about China. You know, if you want to go into international business, China is a must. You must know about them, because even if you don't want to do business with China, so many things are made from China and so many supply chains originate from there. You're going to have an understanding of something there. Or at least maybe you don't have to, but in my opinion, it puts everybody at a much better situation and allows people to understand their strategy. Now, I want to elaborate more on the difference between the government and the people here in a second. So let's continue. All right. So earlier I made the comment about, you know, the Chinese people are not the government of China. Some people have put out figures that there's like 90 million Chinese Communist Party members. That's a lot of people, but it's a country of 1.4 billion. Okay, so it's like 3 or 4 times the size of the United States. And so there are not nearly as many Communist Party members as you might think. Now, what else is interesting is the culture. I've heard this now a couple times that China's culture is, you know, China's culture is a culture, it's, you know, thousands of years old in many ways, and there some ideas are rooted in Confucianism, Confucian principles, Confucian ideas. And I am not extremely familiar with this, but I do know a little bit about it. And before I continue, let's take a look at a tweet I wanted to look at from a girl named Dovey Wan. She's from China. She's a Bitcoin person, very high-level Bitcoin person, very well-known. So she writes, everything is QR-coded in China now, from payment to health status. Eventually, you will be your eligibility of every social aspect. This is QR code of mine. She shows her QR code. Without it, or if it's showing up as red, I won't be able to go into any public space, get on any public transit in Guangzhou. Not sure how others feel about it, saying a code in hand, no worries about going out. Everybody around me is all obedient, collaborative, as it has already become a native part of their daily life. It seems to be so natural. She writes, the system is developed using telco data, blah, 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 categorize individual social eligibility by health condition is step one. Step two and three can be full-on social credit system. Black Mirror is not being exaggerated. Okay, so basically she's talking about everyone's using QR codes to tell their health status. If your QR code is red, you can't go into a public space or go into certain transit. She's talking about how this can be extrapolated to be used in many different areas of life that we've all been thinking about and been warned about for years, but we have yet to see it come to fruition. So somebody posted underneath her, some of the most Orwellian garbage being used to control people. Truly disgusting that people are just going along with it. Seems like a real case of mass scale Stockholm syndrome. So somebody responded that it was like Stockholm syndrome is how they saw it. And then she pushes back against this idea in a very interesting way. She writes, it's not Stockholm syndrome, in my opinion. It's a collective behavior pattern that's deeply rooted in Chinese culture and history, Confucianism, and more, which is the optimal social condition for overall governments. So, now, what's interesting to me is that I don't disagree with her. And now, of course, you know, what does it mean if I disagree with her, right? I'm no expert in Chinese historic culture. But I see that. I understand that. When I was in China, I can understand that. Teaching Chinese students, I understand that. Being in college there for a year, I understand that. You see that everywhere. That there is a... In China and in other Eastern cultures, right? Like, this is one reason why Koreans were very, I think, very receptive to their prodding by the government to do things to contain the virus. Same in Singapore, same in Taiwan, same in Japan. There is a much more of a emphasis on social stability. Social stability, social cohesion are huge, huge priorities in Asia. And it's not just control at the basic level of individuals. It's not necessarily about being controlled as much as it's about trying to maintain a working society for the long term. Because in a society to work long term, there has to be cooperation. It doesn't necessarily have to be coercive from the government, but there has to be cooperation, which means people have to have some kind of similarity of thinking, some kind of similarity. There has to be a similarity somewhere. What's interesting is that this overlaps with what I've talked about before with us being interconnected. The more interconnected we are, the less free we are. The less free we are to make up our own decisions and have our own values, right? Because if you have to get along with everybody, if you have to get along with people from all over the world, then you don't necessarily get to... if you're too interconnected, then you have to agree with somebody from China if you're in America. And someone from China has to agree with you. But if you're not as interconnected, people in China can do whatever they want, and people in America can do whatever they want. You can scale this down to states and localities as well. But in Asia and in China, I think because of their historical background, there is a heavier emphasis on social stability. And because of that, there's many peculiar things in China. There's more of a deferment in Asia in general to authority. And it can be taken advantage of. Now, that's what I want to hit on now, is it's being taken advantage of. I do believe 100% that China's historical, cultural pattern has allowed it to survive to some extent for so long. You know, that there is some kind of social cohesion which is pushed on people from the time they're young. However, it also creates a situation for it to be abused. And what I think we see in China right now is that abuse. We see the Chinese Communist Party, the way that they, subject their people to these rules, the way that that they monitor everyone's phones, they monitor everyone's social media, they monitor many activities of your life. You don't have a lot of, there's lots of areas you don't have freedom in China. Lots of areas you do, lots of areas you don't, though, as well. And the Chinese government, what they do in order to kind of keep people under control, not only do they justify it in terms of economy, right? Because people like the fact that their standard of living has been rising over the last 20 or 30 years, but they can also justify some things by talking about stability and talking about Confucian values. I believe that this is how the Chinese Communist Party is able to exploit outsiders as well. So they're able to exploit people like that guy that was doing an interview with Tucker Carlson. That his name was Peter Walker, I believe. He has been shown in public to really kind of praise the Chinese model of governance. And it's because the Chinese model, what they can do is they can say, look, we're an oppressive dictatorship. But it's not really an oppressive dictatorship. What it really is, Confucian values of social stability, right? Okay, but it's like, all right, you can take that to an extreme level in at least the modern day, where kids are just shoveled off to mass public schools, where kids are indoctrinated in mass schools. They are doing homework all day and night so they can't think for themselves. When a doctor tries to warn the beginning of a pandemic, a worldwide pandemic, they're thrown in jail. These are not Confucian values, right? Confucian values isn't spying on the people in your, isn't spying on people's private communications and throwing them in jail because they say something you disagree with. I'm pretty sure that's not Confucian values. But these Confucian values can be conflated with what the CCP has in mind. It can be conflated with their goals. So they can use the Confucian values and say, hey, look, guys, we had to arrest these people. We had to put them in jail because social stability was at risk. And if we don't have social stability and cooperation, then the society can't function and people won't eat and people can't, you know, survive. So they can really exploit that. And it looks good to foreigners, too. Now, I don't necessarily believe that a country as big as China necessarily should be governed like America. Like, I don't think that you should say, hey, 1.4 billion people should live in a federation of states with a, like, kind of crazy election cycle and all this stuff. I don't necessarily think that's the case. And it's up to them, right? It's up to them what they want to do. But people shouldn't be fooled that what we see over there is a legit cultural history. You know, people wonder, how did the Chinese just put up with it? Why don't they fight back? Why don't they have a revolution? Well, don't get me wrong. Some people do. There are protests in China, right? There was a revolution in the early 1900s. There was a, they're the guys, Chiang Kai-shek. They're the ones in Taiwan now. They overthrew, I think it was the last emperor of the Qing dynasty. And then he, Chiang Kai-shek, was defeated basically by Mao and had to get the hell out of mainland China. And so he went to Taiwan. So, I mean, you see stuff like this in history. It does happen. But it's not as common. And anyway, that's there's lots of people that do just want to value their life as it is on the small scale. You know, some people, not everybody cares about the, you know, the idea of, like, being free in the sense of being able to say whatever they want. Some people just want to survive. And that's all. And when you get to that point, then, you know, you're not going to have a lot of revolutions unless their survival is threatened. But China is a complex place. And I think we need to understand more about it. We need to read more about it. There's a book that I've read, I've been reading, been listening to for a long time, never finished it, called On China by Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger did not do right by the United States, but he's got an interesting view into China, because he was in direct negotiations with Mao Zedong back in the 70s. So it's very good to listen to. Anyway, that's all I got for today. You can follow me on my website, tstuch.com, T-S-T-U-C-H.com. Follow me on Twitter, tstuch1. Follow me on Instagram, Taylor Radio, T-A-Y-L-O-R-R-A-D-I-O. You can follow me on YouTube, like and subscribe, Taylor Space Stuch, T-A-Y-L-O-R Space Stuch, S-T-U-C-H. Buy my fucking merch. I've got merch out now, but it's a sloppy Joe Biden shirt. If you think Joe Biden is a fucking idiot, then you should buy the shirt. That doesn't mean I'm endorsing Trump, even though I'll probably vote for him. So, yeah, whatever. But Joe Biden is sloppy and nasty. So you can buy that shirt. It's a Teespring/Tstuch, T-S-T-U-C-H. White and black. It's very good. That's all. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.